What's up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you have a fantastic Thursday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today and some who is the internet outraged at today news, although by no means the only one, and there are some stories that we're looking into a little further now, but with this one, we had an interesting pairing. You had two very large creators in the center of this. You had Ethan from H3H3 Productions, as well as Trisha Paytas. Ethan recently put out a popular video called Instagram versus Reality, and in it, he comments on and seemingly goes after people who look like pristine, perfect on Instagram. And then another photo where sometimes it's just another angle or like a candid from when they were taking that other perfect photo, or just another photo where they don't look so perfect. And as far as the people featured, I mean, you have some more of the kind of mainstream types like the Khloe Kardashians of the world, but kind of the big three social people he comments. You had the Tana Mojo.
Oh damn, Tana's looking pretty good these days. Oh. I can't believe it's the same day. She looks like a Twinkie. Tana, what are you doing? Oh my God, it's so messed up because Tana's got these young, impressionable audience that's gonna look at this and really get messed up over it because it's just messed up to show yourself like a beautiful mermaid when in actuality, you're more of a manatee.
Ethan also commenting on Nikita Dragon.
So this girl apparently is known on Instagram for having like a being thick, you know? And my goodness, just looking at this, there's nothing real. It actually breaks my heart, you know? Because I know plenty of guys out there that will look at that girl on the left and be like, boom, you know what I mean?
And then the thumbnail of the video, Trisha Paytas.
Yes!
This girl is the spokesman of Instagram reality. Why are you even a model if you're gonna modify your looks that much? It's like from beauty queen to WWF wrestler in 2 seconds. You cannot Photoshop your heart and soul. Remember that. This girl tried to use a face filter on Instagram and her phone blew up. Here's another one of her. Ah, she is the best. Isn't she not the best? Would people even recognize her if they saw her on the street? I mean, she is unrecognizable. This is Coachella versus throwing down in the McDonald's parking lot at 3 a.m. This is Coachella versus World Star Hip Hop.
No, that cannot be the same person.
Dude, Coachella versus open casket funeral.
And seemingly the point of the video that he was trying to make was what you see on Instagram is not reality, that by posting false perfection, that's actually detrimental to very young viewers or just really anyone that are like, I'm not looking like that. And seemingly boiling it down to,
I guarantee you that you will be feeling better, more confident. We need to embrace that and lift ourselves up in the knowledge that we are all ugly, pathetic monsters that just want to eat McDonald's every day.
I'm ugly and fat, okay? You gotta work with what you got here. We're not fooling anyone.
Which I will say, it seems pretty on brand for Ethan since I don't know if he's posted a photo to the internet where he's not giving himself as many chins as possible. Although I will say personally, my favorite are the he and his wife are both pregnant photos. But as might not be apparent, if you're looking at the like-dislike count of Ethan's video, there were people that were angry. You had some general people, you had some social people who aren't featured in the video, like Anthony Padilla. He started by saying, I love the overall message in your video. You don't have to Photoshop yourself to feel good, and Instagram models are giving us unrealistic body expectations. But then adding, but saying the unedited photos of these women look like manatees, Twinkies, and other insults seems to go against that positive message. What was your reasoning for including that? Ethan eventually responding, comedy, which another creator by the name of Siren Micah responded, comedy shouldn't be used to bring other people down, which Ethan responded, can you email me the comedy handbook? I will review the rules and adhere to its guidelines. And then, of course, a very big reaction came from Trisha Paytas. She went on a Twitter spree at first, calling Ethan a disgusting piece of shit, calling the video not only predatory, but also harmful to young girls, adding you're using photos of different days to make your quote point. She calls the video trash, bullying. She then contacts Ethan's wife, Ela, saying, please, Ela Klein, do not raise your child to be as ignorant as your husband. I would divorce him ASAP, adding that you stand by him is even more disgusting, telling Ethan she was suicidal at age 13, 15, 19, 22, and 25. Over comments like the ones Ethan makes. Ethan then responded to the tweet saying that Ela should divorce him, saying, who is this rude person? I don't recognize her from her profile picture. Anyone know? Trisha also posted an almost 19-minute video to YouTube, which I will say, if you're unfamiliar with kind of any bit of the YouTube internet scene, Trisha's kitchen floor is a lot like this couch. You don't usually want to tell people you know where it's from, but when you see it, you know shit's about to go down. And she goes on this extended reaction and rant that, you know, are touched on in the tweets. Although I will say, in general, that video has not been well received. Some of the top comments saying that it was uncalled for that she went after Ela. Another saying, you used to be an inspiration for young girls, but now you push weight loss products in every other Instagram post. That's damaging to young girls. Others writing, I think you editing your photos to the point where you're unrecognizable is more damaging than Ethan reminding everyone that Instagram is fake. But you know, that's where the situation is now. As far as my reaction to this, it would be hard for me to give an unbiased reaction. I'm personally a fan of Ethan and Hila. I like what they put out. I like them. I think Ethan and people who support Ethan and this video that he put out see his kind of jabs and the name calling as completely fine, given that they see kind of the ridiculously impossible photoshopping as being far worse, far more damaging. And so the people putting out these false impossible images, that those are the people that are the bad guys, so you can kind of swing down, but they're also massively popular on Instagram, so you're also kind of swinging up. But yeah, once again, as far as my reaction, I am gonna be biased here. So I am gonna pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? Do you believe that he went too far, that what he did was wrong, or the names kind of hurt his point, right? Because maybe those are the kinds of comments that lead people to feeling like they have to Photoshop their images. Because, you know, on that note, people on the internet do suck. But it also especially sucks for women. Like, my doughy ass, I get so few hate comments about my looks. My wife, and obviously I'm biased here, who I think is just a fucking gorgeous person inside and out, there are like dedicated communities to just making sniping comments about her looks when she's posting Instagram stories. Right, so to bring it back to the story, right, is there a defense that the extra photoshopping, the glam, the impossible, right, of these other Instagram influencers, it's almost more defensive. So maybe they're not just the promoters of the impossible, thus the bad guy, but they're also like the victims of the situation? Or no, because they're putting out these false images to impressionable young girls or just people in general, it makes them fair game. I'd really love to know your thoughts on this one, especially at a time when we're seeing reports and studies come out talking about how social media is affecting our mental health. I don't know. I'd really love to know your thoughts on this specific story, but if there is a note that we could hit on, separate from the controversy, please, please, please do not judge your life based on what you see other people sharing from their lives online. The way that I've always put it is that the person or the things that you are seeing online, it is not the creator, it is the self-portrait of the creator. For example, this morning on my Instagram, I posted this photo. You think I really fight my child with a sword? No. I use my hands to pick him up and give him daddy cuddles. You think this photo of Liza Koshy and I wearing the same outfit at the Met Gala is real? Well, that one is actually. Because technically not everything is fake on Instagram. The main point is these are just some stupid jokes I'm tacking onto the end of this story because otherwise it's really, really polarizing. Then, in drug news, it appears that Denver is going to be the first city in the United States to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. While there are similar efforts that are trying to get on ballots for 2020 in places like Oregon and California, Denver actually had a vote on Tuesday. With that vote, early polling actually made it look like this was going to fail. But then the news came out that just by a margin of 1,979 votes, yes passed. Right? It had 50.56% of the vote. Now, just so we once again understand, this is not that it is now legalized, but as NPR put it, it effectively bars the city from prosecuting or arresting adults 21 or older who possess them. And adding in the ballot language, adults can even grow the fungus for personal use and be considered a low priority for Denver police. And this change could happen as soon as next year. That said, still under federal law, it is a Schedule 1 drug. Reportedly, officials with the DEA in Denver say they will continue prosecuting cases regarding trafficking and possession. You know, this is a big move because, yes, while it is still technically classified as a Schedule 1 drug, at the same time, we've seen reports that these mushrooms could actually be groundbreaking medicine, very notably for helping with treatment-resistant depression, with even the FDA last year giving psilocybin therapy for treatment-resistant depression a breakthrough therapy designation. But yeah, that's where we'll leave it right now. Obviously, based on that vote, you can see people are very, very split on it, at least there. And so I pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? Are you happy to see this change? Or no, you think this is a horrible idea? Any and all thoughts. And then let's talk about Facebook, because congratulations, Facebook was in the news for a good reason. I'm kidding. Facebook was in the news today because this morning, the New York Times put out an op-ed written by a Facebook co-founder by the name of Chris Hughes. And that article was called, "It's Time to Break Up Facebook." And in it, Hughes, who yes, was a co-founder, but who also has not worked for Facebook since 2008, argues that the company has given Mark Zuckerberg too much power. Writing, "I'm angry that his focus on growth led him to sacrifice security and civility for clicks. I'm disappointed in myself and the early Facebook team for not thinking more about how the newsfeed algorithm could change our culture, influence elections, and empower nationalist leaders. And I'm worried that Mark has surrounded himself with a team that reinforces his beliefs instead of challenging them." And adding, "We are a nation with a tradition of reigning in monopolies, no matter how well-intentioned the leaders of these companies may be. Mark's power is unprecedented and un-American. It is time to break up Facebook." And in this, among other things, Hughes calls for the government to force Facebook to split Instagram and WhatsApp into separate companies and to regulate the company. And one of the main things Hughes hit on was speech, saying the most problematic aspect of Facebook's power is Mark's unilateral control over speech, adding there is no precedent for his ability to monitor, organize, and even censor the conversations of 2 billion people. And he says the root of the issues with Facebook is that they effectively have a monopoly with no government oversight. Right, when they haven't been able to just buy out a competitor, they attack them by just copying an idea. Like for example, when Snapchat got big and they just copied the stories and disappearing messages. Which actually, on that note, according to Wired magazine, when this happened, Zuckerberg's message became an informal slogan at Facebook. Don't be too proud to copy. And along with the breakup, Hughes calls for a new government agency that will regulate tech companies, with its first mandate being to protect privacy, a privacy bill that specifies what control we have over our digital information, and guidelines for acceptable speech on social media similar to rules against yelling fire in a crowded theater, saying there is no constitutional right to harass others or live stream violence. And he was also arguing that even an unsuccessful campaign to break up the company could still lead to changes in the industry, but still ending with Mark Zuckerberg cannot fix Facebook, but our government can. And to kind of simplify it, what Hughes is doing, the whole thing here is an argument that a purely free market does not work and that the only way to solve our problems is to increase competition by combating tech monopolies. Right, and this is something that we've talked about before. There are kind of only a few big players. You have Facebook, which is also Instagram. Then you have Twitter. Then you have Google, aka YouTube. You could also technically throw in Snapchat into the mix, but you don't usually think of them as one of the big three players. Also, you know what? Apple's been in the mix lately as far as removing content. And so if just one of these places ban you, I mean, you lose your voice. And if it's even more than one, right? Two, three, where do you go? Right, places that are vital for communication, for speech, but at the same time, people saying, you know, well, it's a private company. Right, you have some people arguing, do we really need government intervention? If they're getting too crazy with who they're banning or who they're censoring, won't the market decide? Or have just a select group of companies become so massive and vital to everyday life that the alternatives don't even have a chance because a Facebook will either buy them up and then, hey, guess what, you're still banned. Or a Facebook or Facebook-type company is just so big, they will then crush that competitor. And people in general who are looking to communicate or consume are just going to go to the bigger, easier thing. And so with all of that said, I do want to pass the question off to you. Do you think that we need to see government intervention here? Any and all thoughts you have on this, I'd love to hear. Then let's talk about everyone's favorite toddler with a hand grenade, North Korea. And the reason we're talking about North Korea is the country just conducted its second missile test in less than a week. The first test was on Saturday morning with South Korean media first reporting it. It was then later confirmed by a state-run news outlet in North Korea, and they called it a strike drill that tested, quote, large caliber, long-range, multiple rocket launchers and tactical guided weapons. And in response to that test, President Donald Trump tweeted, anything in this very interesting world is possible. But I believe that Kim Jong-un fully realizes the great economic potential of North Korea and will do nothing to interfere or end it. He also knows that I am with him and does not want to break his promise to me. Deal will happen. But then, that second North Korean test happened today when the country tested two short-range ballistic missiles, one reportedly traveling 167 miles and the other reaching 260. This was again reported by South Korean media, and it's believed that they were launched from a base in the Shinori area. And the timing of this test is interesting for two reasons. One, this test came just 10 minutes before the United States conducted a test of its own. According to the Washington Post, this was a scheduled launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile from a base in California, although it apparently was not in response to North Korea's test, and the timing was just a coincidence. And two, just yesterday, the U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea, Stephen Bagan, arrived in South Korea. And he's there because he's meeting with leaders to discuss relations with the North. And it's also not like this is coming out of nowhere. The United States' relationship with North Korea has gone through some hurdles in the past couple of months. Which, on that note, it has been a while since we talked about it, so let's play a little bit of catch-up. Back at the end of February, Trump and Kim Jong-un met at a summit in Vietnam, but those talks ended abruptly after the two couldn't reach a deal on sanctions and denuclearization. Then, in April, North Korea conducted its first test since the summit, and then around that same time, North Korea announced on KCNA that it no longer wanted to work with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo when it came to nuclear negotiations. And in a statement by a representative in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they said that Pompeo showed a mean character and, we cannot be aware of Pompeo's ulterior motive behind his self-indulgence and reckless remarks, whether he is indeed unable to understand words properly or just pretending on purpose. But after that, Pompeo told reporters, quote, nothing has changed. We'll continue to work to negotiate, still in charge of the team. President Trump's obviously in charge of the overall effort, but it'll be my team. Then at the end of April, we saw Kim go to Russia for the first time and meet with Vladimir Putin. Their meeting was brief, and while they discussed nuclear talks, many experts say that they were not that in-depth. With 38 North, which is a group devoted to analyzing news and events surrounding North Korea, saying, the summit was friendly, but seems to have produced little substance. Putin signaled that he is a player in the North Korea game, but his stakes in the game are probably not as high as those of other players. But of course, all of this brings us to the question of, okay, well, where does this leave us now? Well, on Sunday, Pompeo spoke about North Korea's testing, saying that the test conducted on Saturday, quote, didn't present a threat to the United States or to South Korea or Japan. Adding, we still believe that there's an opportunity to get a negotiated outcome where we get fully verified denuclearization. So we hope that this act that he took over the weekend won't get in the way. We want to get back to the table. But as of recording this video, it is unclear if today's tests have now changed this perspective either from Pompeo or the administration in general. On the note of Pompeo, he has also just shortened his trip to Europe to return to DC. Allegedly, he's doing this so he could have meetings and discuss both Iran and North Korea. But of course, it's important to remember this is still a developing situation. In fact, while I was recording this today, we saw an update this morning. The United States has now reportedly seized a North Korean cargo ship, saying that North Korea was violating international sanctions by illicitly exporting coal. And that's notable, once again, not only because of the timing, but this is the first time the United States has seized a North Korean ship for this reason. It puts an even bigger question mark on the relationship between North Korea and the United States. And as far as what happens next, it's hard to tell, because it appears that when you look at the news, it seems like escalation, escalation, escalation. But then at the same time, it feels like Trump is minimizing this, and part of that might be damage control, part of it might be part of the negotiation. I mean, this morning saying that nobody's happy about these latest reports of the missiles, but also saying, quote, we're looking at it very seriously right now. They were smaller missiles, short-range missiles, and then also adding, I know they want to negotiate, they're talking about negotiating, but I don't think they're ready to negotiate. Maybe I'm just a cynic, but kind of like what I said at the beginning of this, whenever we've talked about North Korea, a lot of North Korea's actions seem more about legitimizing Kim Jong-un and North Korea by getting to say, oh yeah, we were definitely down for negotiations, but they didn't get it. By getting to meet with, whether you like Donald Trump or not, the president of the United States is pretty much the most important person, or at least figurehead in the world. And you know, in general, it opens the door more for Kim Jong-un diplomatically with other international leaders. Especially when you look at North Korea, the only thing that keeps them safe is the threat of attacking US allies, or now the threat of being able to attack the United States. Because I really feel like after what happened to Gaddafi, dictators of the world took note. But that is where I'll leave that one, and of course, pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think that there is a world, whether it be this administration or another, where North Korea diplomatically denuclearizes? Or do you feel like this is all for nothing and then the United States is getting played here? And that's where we're going to end today's show. And remember, if you like today's video, you want to support the channel, just take a second and hit that like button. Also, if you're new here, you want to make sure you don't miss the 7 videos we post every week, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Also, if you're not 100% filled in, maybe you missed one of the last 2 videos I put out, you can click or tap right there to watch those. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you Monday.